Morning, everyone. The Labor, Industry, Veterans, and Military Affairs, Finance, and Policy Committee will come to order. I would like to announce that this meeting will take place in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This meeting may be viewed on House Public Information TV, which is available on the website. As is custom with this committee, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Before we get started, Mr. Peacher, will you please take the roll?
Chair Eklund.
Present.
Eklund present. Representative Zhang. Representative Detmer. Representative McDonald. Representative Berg.
Present.
Representative Berg present. Representative Bliss. Representative Edelson. Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Frederick present. Representative Greenman. Representative Nelson.
Nelson present.
Representative Nelson present. Representative Poston.
Poston present.
Representative Poston present. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh present.
Representative Raleigh present. Representative Sundin.
Present.
Representative Sundin present. And Mr. Chair, we do have a quorum.
Chair Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Petrie. Representative Poston.
Bliss and McDonald Bliss and Detmer had been excused for today's meeting.
I guess I'm not aware of that, Representative Poston, though. We'll have to deal with that with the committee administrator and CLA. So thank you.
We were notified, so yeah, they'll be marked unexcused in the minutes. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Poston. Quorum is present. Next on the agenda is approval of minutes from February 9th, 2022. Representative Poston, I assume you looked at the minutes, so you could probably make a motion to approve them.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have, and I would like to move those minutes.
Any questions or additions or deletions? All those in favor of the minutes, please say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Minutes are adopted. Members, we have one bill on the agenda today, which is from Representative Frazier, House File 2900. I will move that House File 2900 be referred to the State Government Finance Committee. Welcome, Representative Frazier, and please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, lead committee members. I would like to introduce Bill 2900. And good to be with you all this morning. I am visiting you all from a great city of St. Cloud this morning, where I spent time with frontline workers this morning discussing a bill and talking about their needs. Not only the needs that have arisen and shown during the pandemic, but needs that were there prior to the pandemic as well. So this bill, 2900, addresses the issues of payments for our frontline workers. Nearly 2 years ago, we were in a stay-at-home order. And for many of us, for some of us, it meant that we could stay home while we quarantined or while we sheltered in place and did our work virtually. But for most of our workers, particularly our frontline workers, our essential workers, they were showing up day in and day out, doing the things and providing the services that Minnesota needed for their economy and for us that were able to stay home to continue to move forward. These were our child care providers, making sure the children of our doctors and our nurses were able to show up and take care of people that had contracted COVID-19. And also making sure that our janitors were able to show up to our businesses that were being frequented to make sure they were clean and sanitized so that we wouldn't be exposed to COVID-19. These are also our home care workers that were showing up to make sure that people that were home and shut in before the pandemic were able to still maintain and live their lives. What we've done is we've called all of these essential workers, we've called them heroes, and we've said that several times throughout the time of this pandemic. But what we haven't done is taken an action to show them our gratitude and show them how much it really meant for them to do their work for us to keep us moving forward. Now we have a $7.7 billion surplus. In a large part, that is due to the work of our frontline workers, because they showed up day in and day out, putting themselves at risk of being exposed to the virus, and also putting their families at risk of being exposed to the virus on their behalf when they came home each night. We have the $7.7 billion surplus. They were the energy, they were the passion that drove and allowed our businesses to stay open and keep running and to prosper and maintain. So we bring this bill forward to honor these frontline workers with checks of up to $1,500. We've set the criteria, the time period for those that work during the time period of stay at home order that had to work in person. We've set income limits, and we've set, we will have this money be non-taxable, and it will make sure, and also will make sure that it doesn't impact any benefits that they are receiving now. Mr. Chair, with that introduction, I'd like to turn it over to our witnesses.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. We have several testifiers here today, so I will call you out and we'll hold questions to the end of the testifiers. First up is Commissioner Roslyn Robertson, Minnesota Department of Labor Industry. Commissioner, welcome back to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Eklund and members of the committee. My name is Roslyn Robertson, and I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. I'm pleased to be here today to testify in support of House File 2900, which provides well-deserved and long-awaited recognition to Minnesota frontline workers for the extraordinary sacrifices they made to keep Minnesota running during the COVID pandemic. This past summer and fall, I had the opportunity to represent the Walz administration on the Frontline Worker Pay Work Group. As a member of that work group, I heard hours of testimony from frontline workers about their reality during the pandemic. They continue to face many of these challenges today. These workers deserve to be respected, protected, and paid for the sacrifices they've made to keep Minnesota economy continuing to go. Whether healthcare or meatpacking, childcare, education, or grocery workers, the Walz administration remains committed to recognizing each frontline worker who have sacrificed so much. This commitment is why I'm here to testify in support of this bill, and the reason Governor Walz has included $1 billion for frontline worker pay in his supplemental budget. The data confirms that workers who were unable to work from home and had to show up to a workplace and work in close proximity to others were and remain at greater risk of contracting COVID-19. The Department of Health provided to the work group some very important information and statistics. In 2020 alone, there were more than 3,500 cases associated with active clusters in the meatpacking plants. Also, another 2,000 cases associated in retail and grocery stores. That was only for 2020. We've been in this pandemic for close to 2 years. From March of 2020 through August of 2021, there were 480 COVID outbreaks in childcare settings and more than 3,500 staff cases with potential exposure in those settings. The statistics go on and on, showing that almost 9,000 cases broke out in among our school staff. 11,000 cases of COVID in skilled nursing facilities and transitional care units. These examples demonstrate that workers in different industries doing very different work had one thing in common. They showed up to work and they worked alongside patients, coworkers, students, despite the risks that doing so presented to them and their families. I'm testifying in support of this bill because it provides these frontline workers with some recognition and some compensation for their incredible commitment and sacrifices. I want to take a moment just to talk a little bit about the behind-the-scenes work that will be necessary to build and implement a program of this size. DLI is working closely with its partner agencies, the Department of Revenue, DEED, and MNIT, to be as prepared as possible for final legislation. We know that developing a program to distribute $1 billion to more than 650,000 workers is not an easy task, but we believe that with proper authority, preparation, time, and funding, we are indeed up to the challenge. We also know that we can't do this alone. We will have to work with our partners within state government and our partners outside of state government to ensure that workers who are entitled to this pay is aware of and understand the process in order to apply for this benefit. In conclusion, I want to thank the committee for allowing me to testify, and I ask the committee members to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next testifier is Brian McNeil from MAVE. Mr. McNeil, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. I'm Brian McNeil, and I'm a behavior analyst with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and work at the Veterans Home in Minneapolis. I am testifying today on behalf of MAVE. Minnesota has six state veterans homes serving more than 700 Minnesota veterans, their spouses, and Gold Star parents. It has been all hands on deck for nearly 2 years at MDVA. We have fought the Alpha, the Delta, and now we're fighting the Omicron variant of COVID-19. Each time we hear that the newest variant could be more deadly or more contagious than the last. During the recent Omicron surge that happened just a month ago, we had the most cases ever in our facility. Cases jumped from 5 to 20 to 64 in a matter of days. Every morning we walked into a workplace where we didn't know if we were interacting with someone with COVID. I constantly worry about whether I will bring COVID back home to friends and family or if I'll get a veteran sick. This recent outbreak, it really triggered memories of those dark days in the beginning of the pandemic when people were dying in extremely large numbers. Yet, no matter what, all of the employees of the state veterans home stepped up and we continue to come in. Our Minnesota veterans who served during World War II, the Korean War, Vietnam, and Gulf Wars, they deserve the best care. They deserve a place where they can live the final chapters of their lives in peace and comfort. We continue to come in because we are compassionate about the quality of care that our veterans receive. When our facility was in quarantine, when family and friends could not visit the veterans, we were there to hold their hands, to reassure them that we will get through this pandemic, and that they are not alone. We admire their military service and how much they sacrificed. I truly enjoy helping these American heroes. It saddens me that veterans have moved in. They've lived and died in the home here without ever seeing the face of staff who supported them because we're all wearing PPE to protect them. For many people, life appears to be returning to normal. Some people are returning to the office while others, they're able to continue working from home. People can go out to restaurants, gather in groups. For us frontline workers, we continue to work in this pandemic world. We continue to worry about getting COVID. We continue to worry about giving COVID to others. Legislators must step up for the 650,000 frontline workers who put their lives on the line, risk their own health and the health of their family members day after day to keep our fellow Minnesotans safe. Lawmakers say that they agree that more essential workers should be given bonus pay. please support House File 2900, allowing $1,500 bonus payments to frontline workers. The frontline workers who continue to put themselves at risk for it to keep others safe and to keep the state going should be acknowledged and rewarded. Like the veterans I proudly serve, frontline workers risk their lives through the pandemic to make Minnesota safer for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McNeil. Please stick around in case there's questions. Next up is Chris Rubish, Minnesota Nurses Association. Mr. Rubish, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning. my name is Chris Rubish. I'm a cardiac nurse at Essentia Health in Duluth, and I'm also the first vice president of the Minnesota Nurses Association. In Minnesota, we represent 80% of all of our bedside nurses. I'm here today on behalf of more than 22,000 nurses across the state to share with you again what it has been like working on the front line of this pandemic and why it's so important that we get House File 2900 passed so that frontline workers have some small recognition of what we've been through for almost 2 years now. Throughout this pandemic, nurses have continued to do what we've always done, step up and care for people. Regardless of the situation, our number one concern is always our patients. For 2 years now, nurses have worked longer shifts and more shifts. We've risked our health, the health of our families, and to care for Minnesotans. We've gone to every length to contain the spread of this virus in our homes and our communities. Many of us, including myself, isolated from our spouses and our children, living in garages or trailers to protect our family from the spread of the virus. We were a connective thread between patients and their families, the ones holding an iPad so loved ones could virtually visit patients in facilities. We were the ones holding the hands of COVID patients to bring some semblance of comfort and dignity as they passed away alone. Throughout all of this, we've had to fight for the smallest of things. We fought for adequate testing. We fought for N95 masks and the ability to use them correctly and safely. We've had to fight for isolation gowns. We've even had to fight for the ability to shower at our facilities before leaving the hospital, preventing the transmission of the virus. And on top of it all, we've had to fight for our pay too. Every time we've developed symptoms or had a risk of exposure, we were quarantined and waited for a test result. For many nurses, that meant using their hard-earned benefit time to cover missed shifts or going without pay entirely to keep the public and our patients safe. Now imagine being told by the legislature in 2021 that frontline workers deserve recognition for their hard work and sacrifice. And then imagine that that recognition still has not arrived as nurses and healthcare workers continue to take on the burden of care in our hospitals that are understaffed and full beyond capacity of patients needing care. You have another chance to make it right for frontline workers by passing House File 2900. Nurses didn't become nurses for the gratitude. We don't expect thanks. We don't want to be called heroes or angels. We just don't want to lose our lives or our livelihoods because we work on the front lines. No worker does. We have families too, and I'm here asking for them and for all essential workers. Please, there's still an opportunity to make this right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rubish. As others, please stick around in case there's questions. Next testifier is Rena Wong, USCW Local 663. Ms. Wong, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Eklund and committee members. I'm Rena Wong. I'm the organizing director at USCW Local 663. Our local represents more than 17,000 hardworking retail grocery, meatpacking, processing, food preparation, manufacturing, healthcare, and other workers in Minnesota and Iowa who are frontline essential workers and who have not been able to work from home. UFCW members were required to show up to work so that the people of Minnesota could have access to food and supplies needed during the pandemic. Our members could not work from home. They did not have 6 feet of social distance from customers in stores who leaned over them without masks, or 6 feet between themselves while they killed and processed meat. Thanks, Commissioner Robertson, for sharing some of the statistics around COVID infections earlier. This last October, the United States House Select Committee on the Coronavirus crisis released a report that shared newly obtained documents nationally from five of the largest meatpacking conglomerates, which includes JBS, Tyson, Smithfield, Cargill, and National Beef. It revealed that coronavirus infections and deaths among the meatpacking workers were substantially higher than previously estimated. Across these five companies, at least 59,000 meatpacking workers were infected during the first year of the pandemic. That is almost three times the infections previously estimated. And at least 269 of those meatpacking workers lost their lives to the coronavirus between March 2020 and February of 2021. One of our members at Quality Pork in Austin, Minnesota is at work and cannot be here. But Claudia told us that when COVID hit, she watched the virus go from department to department and from the night shift to the day shift. She watched her coworkers fall ill as it went throughout the plant and then throughout their neighborhoods and the apartment buildings where her coworkers live. She saw some of her closest friends get very sick, and they still suffer from the effects of COVID now, over a year later. Claudia, her coworkers, and all food workers kept our state fed. In her words, "I kept going to work. We kept getting sick, but we kept running. Some nights, we were so short of workers, hardly anyone was on their own job. But we did it because we knew it was the right thing to do." The least Minnesota can do now is to recognize food workers and all frontline essential workers by acknowledging them for their hard work and sacrifice throughout this pandemic by passing House File 2900 and making them eligible for this program you're creating for frontline worker pay. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Wong. Next up is Jody Belknap from SEIU Local 284. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Chair and members. My name is Jody Belknap. I have been a paraprofessional school age care site supervisor for the past 28 years in ISD 197 schools. I am a union steward and a member of SEIU Local 284, the union of over 8,000 school workers across the state. Before COVID, our jobs were working with kids who came as early as 6:30 a.m. before school, or after school as late as 6 p.m. Our services are essential to our community families. They entrust their children to our care, knowing we strive to deliver programs that promote safe environments, where their children experience personal, physical, and ethical growth through activities like science, cooking, art, and physical play. During COVID, we were required to do our usual work, but also we were in person setting kids up for distance learning. We watched the kids of other essential workers. We were coordinating with multiple off-site teachers to assist in keeping classes running efficiently, which posed new and unique challenges for us. We went from our usual job to being teachers and guides for dozens of K through eighth grade students. We now were teaching music, facilitating gym, running breakout groups, being tech experts, and so much more. Like so many others during this pandemic, many of my coworkers were dealing with high levels of anxiety. Their fear around COVID was so high that many people quit, and it's been hard to find replacements for them. Yesterday, for example, at work, there were two of us for 50 kids. In a perfect world, we would have four or five staff for that number of kids. So we're down 50%. We also are dealing with the fact that our district stopped covering our pay if we get COVID. Paraprofessionals have repeatedly stepped to the plate. We keep showing up during COVID, risking our own health, because this work is important to us, but we feel overlooked by those in charge. So many people across so many jobs showed up every day during this pandemic. as others stayed home and those in power in our district worked remotely, we kept coming in and risked our health because we needed and wanted to be there for these kids. Getting a $1,500 check, it wouldn't solve the problems we're facing, but it would show gratitude and it would show that our state appreciates and values the frontline workers like us who kept this state running. Please pass this bill as soon as possible.
Thank you. Thank you for testimony, Ms. Belknap. Next up is Daniel Humphrey, UFCW, Local 663. Mr. Humphrey, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Chair and committee members. My name is Daniel Humphrey, and I live in Uptown Minneapolis. I'm here today to voice my support to this committee in favor of providing $1,500 frontline worker pay to essential workers. I joined UFCW Local 663 in 2021, and I'm currently working at Lunds and Byerly's in Minnetonka. I'm a front-end supervisor there. I've been there since last April, and I've been in the grocery industry on and off for about a decade. I interact with hundreds of customers a day, most of whom are not wearing masks and not practicing social distancing in the store. These last few weeks, I've received 10 or 12 notifications from my store that another one of my coworkers has COVID. Most of these shifts don't get covered, so it leaves the rest of us stretched pretty thin. I've been exposed to COVID a couple dozen times. I haven't caught it yet, but you know, each time I have to quarantine, or you know, if I get sick, I need a negative COVID test to return to work. And you know, all of that put together, I've missed a few weeks of work. I barely make enough to get by. And without any kind of safety net, every day without pay is a huge blow to my financial security. At the beginning of the pandemic, there was some kind of response from employers and the government to help combat the toll that COVID was taking on us. It wasn't perfect, but it was something, and it helped. And now, while more people are catching COVID than ever, we've been abandoned. We don't need this pay just as a thank you for continuing to work, but we need it to pay the bills that we've had to skip because of the work that we have missed. I urge you to pass this legislation quickly and to get these $1,500 checks into the hands of the 667,000 workers who deserve it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Humphrey. Next up is Troy Bowman, SEIU, Local 26. Mr. Bowman, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, everybody. Chair and members of the board, my name is Troy Bowman, and I currently work as a community safety specialist. I'm one of the people who called on the essential workers, but it was called the essential worker. During this pandemic, when I worked as a subcontractor janitor throughout the pandemic, as I said before, in these hearings, despite being called essential and a hero, I'm going to be honest with you that my experience has felt more like those in power view us as expendable. Working in person during COVID, which was my only choice, and if I wanted to pay my bills, meant I would have to go to work. I caught COVID and had to quarantine multiple times because of multiple exposures. I wasn't surprised when I caught COVID because I had to work 6 to 8 hours in a row breathing air of all the people that were coming in and out of the store. It reminds you, you know, we never knew where it was coming from in the beginning. We just knew that it was airborne, and to wear masks and stuff in the beginning. We didn't even have the proper PPP to even cover us for that. And much earlier, we needed access to masks like we do now, which is why over 1,000 people in my union have caught COVID. Sadly, 5 members of our union have died from COVID. Like thousands of other frontline workers, I've never had an option working from home. And you know what else I never got? I never got COVID pay. let me see. Now, hazard pay for our work in keeping our economy running during this pandemic. Our work and our risk we took helped corporations get huge profits. Is why we have a huge budget surplus. It is frustrating to hear some saying that the first priority of this session should be a massive handout to big corporations. We had to fight hard just to get masks and gloves early on in this pandemic. Now we've been fighting for months to get frontline worker pay. Why is it that working people are always told to wait? When we missed time because of COVID, we had to piece together how we was gonna pay our bills with the time that we missed, even though it wasn't our fault. I got some help from my union and some, then I had to use some of my PTO hours for sick time, but many just had to just try and survive without any income. I am still digging myself out of the hole that those lost paychecks created. I'm glad for this bill. To make sure that all frontline workers are finally getting some recognition. It took all of us as essential workers to get us through these scary times. And it's time to make sure the essential workers get the $1,500.
We lost you at the end there, Mr. Bowman. It faded out. Are you done with your testimony? Okay. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Bowman. Technology doesn't always work for us, but we heard most of it. Thank you. Next up is Comfort Kwan. Hope I got your name right. SEIU Healthcare Minnesota. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon. I just want to say thank you. Can you hear me?
We can hear you fine.
Okay. My name is Comfort Kwan, and I work at the Estates of Fridley. I worked there since 2013 till now. I worked throughout the outbreak of COVID-19. I worked there as a nursing assistant. I'm a frontline worker. And during this COVID time at the estate, it was very, very hard. And even though I hear my other colleagues saying that we don't get recognized, we do not get recognized, and we work so hard, and we do our best to support the families that are in our care. During COVID at the estate, we were very short, and I contracted COVID, and I was quarantined. While quarantining, I was being called to go back to work because we did not have enough staff. I quarantined and I went back to work. I did not get paid COVID pay. My PTO was used, which was not enough, but it was used, and they were paying me the little money that they could give me to survive, and it wasn't enough. I went back to work, even though I wasn't still feeling well. Up to now, I still have symptoms that I'm still dealing with. Because of lack of employees, I was called back to go to work, and I worked the COVID unit most days. And it was very frustrating. You have to dress up and wear those gown and a mask. I'm an asthma patient also, but I tried my best to make sure the residents were taken care of. And I lost a lot of residents too in doing the COVID. Because of all the positive employees and people were not able to hire enough employees because employee was scared. Some employees quit and they did not come back. Some days will work two to three days on the floor with about 52 residents. It was very, very hard. And because I contracted the COVID. Some nights I was afraid to go home to my family. I would work double shift just to stay at work and not carry the disease home. I work alone in COVID unit, not enough employees to release me for my break. I will stay back there. So sometimes the nurse will have to come and release me. We were given COVID bonus to attract new employees to come to work. But at the same time, it worked. Sometimes it did not work. The employees will come and then they will quit as we don't have enough staff on the floor. And we'll go right back to where we started and then they will stop the bonus. I have experience and I have experienced COVID and I would not quit doing what I'm doing because I love helping people. This job is very hard and we need people to get it done. And I feel like a little bit we are getting paid is not enough, but we have to pay our bills and take care of our family. And I'm asking all the leaders in Rana to please help us out with this bill, the $1,500 to help us, even though it's not enough, but to help us with some of our stuff that we didn't take care of during the COVID. Things were like, for instance, when you didn't work, if you don't have COVID, I mean, if you don't have PTO, you don't get paid. And some of us, a lot of things that didn't get done for our family, but we push ourselves to make sure those residents are taken care of. Some don't have families that are coming. We're taking in place of those things too, stepping in as a family and making sure they are okay, Your Honor. And I'll just thank everybody for listening and taking this into consideration to hear our voices as frontliners. And thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, Ms. Buwan. I appreciate your testimony. Next up, Ed Reynoso, Teamsters Local 320. Mr. Reynoso, welcome back to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Edward Reynoso, I'm Director of Political and Legislative Affairs for Teamsters Local 320. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 2900. We represent thousands of workers that would qualify for pay under this proposal. This action, Mr. Chair and committee members, is long overdue. These workers have fulfilled their commitment throughout this pandemic and continue to do so. As Representative Frazier mentioned, these workers were the ones that kept our state running. Action on this bill will provide a small token of appreciation to the many, many sacrifices these workers gave to our communities. We'd appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reynoso. That's the end of our testifiers. Member questions. Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. Specifically, I wanted to ask about, I've got a series of questions, Mr. Chair. I'll lower my hand so that I don't forget later. First question I've got is looking at the bill on line 2.18. It says that in order to qualify, this is for the eligibility for the frontline workers, an individual is eligible to receive a payment if one was employed for at least 120 hours in Minnesota in one or more frontline sectors, which are defined above this, beginning March 15th and then ending June 30th. The next line is 2.20, which says, and by the way, according to the calculation, that's about 15 days of working. So 120 hours divided by 8 hours a day, depending on, you know, how many days you split that up, is about 15 working days. Line 2.2 says, for the hours worked under clause one, which was the 120 hours, and was not able to telework due to the nature of the individual's work. So, Mr. Chair, to whomever can help me out with this one, if 2.18 and 2.2 are correct, would that mean that a teacher who worked the whole time and then taught remotely because they were able to telework, does that mean that teachers are not able to qualify under this, Mr. Chair?
I think I'll refer that question to Representative Frazier. If you, Representative Frazier, do you have an answer for that? Did we lose?
he's muted. I think he's trying to answer. There he is.
There you go,
Representative Frazier. Technology is a wonderful thing, except when it isn't.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I had to switch. Yeah, where I am, where I'm at, I had to switch to my phone because the Wi-Fi wasn't working as well. But Representative Riley, I think I heard your question. That does not necessarily exclude teachers. Not every district allowed telework. So if the individuals meet the criteria, those individuals would qualify for the payments.
Representative Riley.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. So I want to make sure, Representative Frazier, what you just said was clear, and that is if a teacher did perform telework, they are excluded underneath your bill.
What I said was if the individual meets
Representative Frazier.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Representative Riley, I'll repeat again. If the individuals meet the criteria, not every school district allowed for teleworking. So those individuals, if they meet the criteria, they will qualify for the $1,500 checks.
Representative Riley.
And I want to make sure that I'm clear. You're saying that those that qualify do qualify, but those that performed telework in districts that allowed for telework are not eligible.
Representative Frazier.
As long as they meet the criteria where they worked for at least 120 hours as a frontline worker, under this criteria, those individuals would qualify. Representative Riley.
Representative Riley.
So, Mr. Chair, again, we've gone back and forth on this one a couple times now. A teacher who worked the whole time, at least 120 hours, who did telework because their school district allowed it, would not qualify under this reading because 2.2 says for hours worked under Clause 1 and was not able to telework due to the nature of the individual's work, would not qualify. So, Mr. Chair, I'm reading this saying that we're going to cut out all the teachers that were able to do distance learning, and I'm not sure that that was the intent of the author, and I'm troubled that the language is put together that way. So that's
Representative Raleigh, as you know, these bills are a work in progress, and this has another stop. So I'm sure Representative Frazier is going to take a look at your concerns, and if it needs to be adjusted when we get to state bill finance, I believe it's the next place it's going to that. Begins. Representative Frazier.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Let me clarify here. Representative Riley, I understand your question. I appreciate your question. As you know, our teachers are very vital to I call them nation builders. So thank you for lifting them up. I really appreciate that. And I look forward to any votes you may have in support of teachers on the floor throughout this session and beyond. But let me say this. As long as they did not telework the entire time during the period that is listed, those individuals will qualify. Now, we explicitly know that teachers, not all districts were teleworking the entire time. So I just wanted to be clear about that to answer your question.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that means the reverse is true as well. So a person who did work for 15 days and then later on did not would qualify. So it just seems like that needs to be cleaned up a little bit. Next area is 3.11, which is as soon as practical after enactment of this act, the Commissioner of Labor and Industry must establish a process. The question I've got on that one is after this is launched in the same paragraph, subsection B, it says as soon as practical, but then it cuts it off after 45 days. But then later on in the bill, it says that if all the money is not used, then it has to be opened up again. And then it says that the payments, this is at 3.29, it says that the payments not to exceed $1,500. And then Representative Frazier, you stated in your opening that the payments could be up to $1,500. And then we go into line 4.7, which says, The Commissioner of Revenue must make payments.
Representative Raleigh, please face your microphone so we can hear you. We lost half of what you were saying.
Sorry about that. 4.4 states that the full of, or excuse me, I'm not sure where it cut off, so I'll make sure that I state both of them. It says as soon as practical that the commissioner will open this up, then 45 days after it's opened up, it must close, and that the payments amount are not to exceed $1,500. The first question that I've got is, could the payments be less than $1,500 if the clause says not to exceed $1,500? But then we go to 4.7, which I believe is in conflict because it says the Commissioner of Revenue must make payments of $1,500 for all eligible frontline workers who apply under this paragraph. And it just feels like on the one side we're saying up to, and then later underneath 4.7 it says it must make payments of $1,500. So which one is it?
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Riley, thank you for the question. I believe we do have some individuals in this virtual space that can speak to that. Mr. Chair, if you would allow those individuals to speak.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. We have Commissioner Robertson had to leave, but she let me know that she has staff here. Assistant Commissioner Blissenbach, I believe you're on. Commissioner Blissenbach.
Yes, thank you, Chair Eklund, and I'll make sure I'm getting the question right. So the way the bill is set up, at least in our reading, is that the application period would be open for 45 days. Yeah. If during that 45 days we have more workers than we would be able to distribute $1,500 to based on the eligible applicants, then it would be split evenly amongst the workers. If we have less than that, then each worker would receive the $1,500, up to the $1,500, and we would open up another application period. The line in 4.4 to 4.9 talks about if the full appropriation is not expended. So the Commissioner of Revenue would make the payments of $1,500 to all employees because we would have enough to do that. So that would only come into 4.4 to 4.9 would only come into play if we have less applicants than what we could make the $1,500 payment to. Does that answer your question? Thank you.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, that answers the question. So if it exceeds the $1 billion in payments, then you'll distribute whatever that number is divided, you know, however it is divided by $1 billion or $1 billion divided by whatever that number is. If it doesn't, then it will, if it's a not to exceed, then it will be $1,500. I understand that one now.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Next area I've got, Mr. Chair, is there's a notice requirement in Subdivision 7 which states that businesses will only have 15 days, and within that 15-day period, they must notify all employees. So in 3.11, the government gets a time period of as soon as practical. In Subdivision 7, it states that small businesses only get 15 days. So my question, Mr. Chair, is let's say that we've got a small business with 20 employees. Underneath Minnesota Statute 177.27, Subdivision 7, if a small business with 20 employees does not get the word out to their employees, both the current employees and, I believe the way that this is written, employees that have left, they could face up to a $1,000 fine per employee, or in this case, in my example, a 20-person company would face a $20,000 fine. Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if that's true.
Commissioner, could you answer that one?
Chair Eklund and Representative Raleigh, yes, I can. The notice requirement in Subdivision 7 would apply 15 days after the application period is open. So the as soon as practicable language that talks about, that really is about our preparation period to open the application period. So there will be lead up time to when that application period is opened. So during that time, we will be doing outreach. We will be preparing the actual notice. In subdivision 7, it says, you know, we'll provide notice in a form approved by the commissioner, very similar to how we have our minimum wage notices, as well as our OSHA notices that do go out to businesses that they do hang up in the workplace. So we will provide that notice. There will be lead time before the application period opens because we need to build that. And within 15 days after that application period is open is when employers will need to post the notice. As to the penalties, 177.27 does in fact allow us to do that. However, it is only if an employer is found by the commissioner to have repeatedly or willfully violated the section, that notice provision. So our focus, as always is to provide that education, to provide the notice, to give employers the opportunity to hang that notice, to provide it to employees so that everybody who is entitled to this money is aware of the application and aware of the process. And only if an employer willfully, so we ask them to provide the notice and they do not, or repeatedly after we ask them, they then choose not to at a later time, would they be subject to penalties. I don't anticipate that happening here because I expect employers will want their employees to be able to access this money. And our goal is to make sure we reach every employee who is eligible to access this money.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just worry that the 15 days is not going to give a small business who learns about this and then is going to have to print the, as you said, they're going to need to print posters and notices and such. I worry about the 15 days, and that I'd ask the author to take a look at maybe extending that. That would give the employers a little bit more time. Last question that I've got. Specifically to this, Mr. Chair, and until we hear, you know, other questions and such, goes to line 2.17 within the bill. And again, it goes back to the definitions of the frontline workers, and specifically it's the frontline sector defined. 2.7 says public schools, including charter schools, state schools, and higher education. Does this mean that the Catholic schools and the private schools and other schools in my district would not be considered underneath this part of the clause, Mr. Chair?
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Representative Riley, and thank you, Chair. This question came up in the last hearing. We'll take a look at that language and make sure that it's inclusive. The intent of this bill is to be inclusive. So, Mr. Riley, I hope that answers your question.
Representative Raleigh.
And yeah, thank you, Representative Frazier. And that's what I'm worried about is making sure that in our quest to be inclusive, that we include all those that are supposed to be included. And boy, this just it feels like we're I want to make sure that everybody that is supposed to be defined is defined in this one. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I do appreciate the opportunity to ask some questions.
Thank you, Representative Raleigh. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me fine?
Yep, we can hear you fine, Representative McDonald.
Okay, Representative Frazier, I got a question, a couple of questions just for you in one of your subdivisions. Whereas a worker who worked as little as 120 hours would qualify and would be eligible for this period. That's 3 weeks. And yet a nurse or a frontline worker who has in your bill, it caps them at 85,000. So those nurses who have worked or those who worked full time, more than 120 hours, they don't get any bonus whatsoever. But someone who worked as little as 3 weeks gets the bonus. Now, I appreciate your bill compared to the parable of the workers in the vineyard, where the ones who worked little hours got the same amount as those who worked long. But it's not your money, it's the taxpayers' money. So I'm curious as to why you would give a bonus to someone who worked as little as 3 weeks and someone who worked for a long time and who has at a salary been capped qualifies not at all.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to pass this off. Representative McDonald, thank you for that question. And I do want to say I am a taxpayer, so it is my money also. But I'm going to pass that question off. We do have someone in the virtual space that can speak to that. Mr. Elliott is here.
Mr. Elliott, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McDonald. Let me take the second part first, if I may, which was the salary cap. The $85,000 was included in this bill as a requirement of the American Rescue Plan Act premium pay provisions that cap wages for the use of ARPA dollars as premium pay at 150% of the average wage for the state, which is basically $85,000. For nurses and others in nursing homes who provided direct care to COVID-positive residents, we increased that in this bill to $150,000 wage cap. The ARPA guidance allows a unspecified exemption. And so in order to ensure that if ARPA dollars were used for this, the Treasury would not try to claw those back, we had to craft that exemption as narrowly as possible. As to the 120 hours, the simple fact of the testimony in the Frontline Worker Pay Working Group was that if you worked in person around people who were not in your household, you were at risk of contracting COVID. And that was whether you worked one day or, 8 hours or 2,000 hours. And so the ARPA criteria allowed for up to $13 per hour. And at a $1,500 check that you accrue at $13 an hour, you accrue more than $1,500 over 120 hours. And that is where the 120 hours came from.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if someone worked one day out of the 120 hours and may have been exposed to the virus, but then quit while other people pulled their weight and worked through many, many hours, it just doesn't seem fair that that person should qualify for a $1,500 benefit. That's just what folks say out here in Wright County. Because I know in Wright County here, many people work their tails off, and certainly in dangerous times as well. And as far as Main Street America goes, they were shut down for many, many months, completely, no work at all. At least we have these good testifiers and we appreciate all their good work. They had work and they got to be paid. We had many businesses, Main Street businesses, that just were completely out of business, out of work, and no business because they were shut down. And now your bill, Representative Frazier, will penalize them $1,000 if they're unable to, within 15 days, locate an employee who maybe worked for 3 weeks. That seems to be a very unfair and not very good policy whatsoever, Representative Frazier. So I hope as this bill goes to another committee, you reconsider that portion in your bill. You probably read the letter from Minnesota, or the National Federation of Independent Businesses. I'm a small town business on Main Street America, just like thousands of other folks, that would be almost impossible to locate someone from 2 years ago that worked 3 weeks and find them and let them know that they have some money coming. And if not, if they don't do that within a period of time, they'll be fined $1,000 or more, especially in these tough times where they're trying to rebound from such a long time of being out of work. So I hope, Representative Frazier, you reconsider that. I don't think it's good policy, nor do I think someone that worked for 3 weeks should be qualifying for $1,500. Give it to the nurse or the doctor or the, not a doctor, they get their own, but the police, the EMT, those who are on the front line that worked 80 hours, sometimes 60 hours a week. That's my opinion and many others. I do have a question, though, Representative Frazier, about the Minnesota Training Partnership. There's $756,000 going to the Minnesota Training Partnership. Never heard who they are. I don't know who they are. That's fine. I can do my homework. But could you tell me who they are, how that money would distributed through that agency, and why are they exempt from Chapter 16?
Representative Frazier, or do we have somebody else that can answer that question?
I think we may have someone in the room that can answer that question.
Hi, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Balsamo, please identify yourself for record and answer the question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So my name is Jerome Balsamo. I'm with the Minnesota Training Partnership, and I'm the executive director. We are a nonprofit organization in St. Paul. Mostly we work with trying to get and help people into new jobs, training, education throughout the state. One of the reasons that we came up in this project was our relationships that we have with partners throughout the state of Minnesota. A lot of the partners that have testified here today, and it's something that we can, you know, scale up fairly quickly using those partnerships. There was a question about a section or something. I believe that is something the Department of Labor might be able to answer, but that's a quick version of what Minnesota Training Partnership is.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Balsamer, how will you then implement the $756,000? Thank you for that. And how will you make sure that that gets to where it ought to go?
Yeah, so we, thank you, Mr. Chair. So we will work with our partners and we will come up with some contracts for where they can do outreach and market throughout the state of Minnesota, not just the Twin Cities, but outstate areas too. And we will work as all necessary government contracts need to be done. We'll follow all scopes of work and things like that and reporting systems. And a question was asked earlier this week. We're happy to give this committee or the state, however, a report on how those dollars were spent and the outreach we did, the efforts we did, and how we concluded all those efforts.
Representative McDonald.
So just for the record, this organization, Minnesota Training Partnership, I presume you do good work, and I'll probably want to learn a little bit more about you because I appreciate the work that you do of getting Minnesotans back to work. You guys get $756,000, and employees get a penalty. Employers get a penalty if they can't find an employee that worked there. See how there's a disconnect there? So Mr. Balsamo, what is the administration cost for you to distribute it, find the folks and get that money to where it should be? I'm sure it costs you, your organization, some money. What's your administration's cost on that?
Mr. Balsamo.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So just to kind of, the way you asked that question, I just like to kind of massage a little bit. So our organization would get, and it's part of your question, is 10% of that $756,000. That's a minimum admin fee that we use in all our programming. So technically, I guess we are getting $756,000, but we're, you know, sending that out to partner organizations to do the work and be able to scale up fairly quickly. So correct on we're getting $756,000, but we're dispersing that out to organizations to be able to market and do the outreach. We're getting 10% for admin fee.
Representative McDonald.
Right, 10%. That's pretty high, Mr. Balsamo. I would work to try to get that down. Representative Fraser, the commissioner, this is the last thing, I think, Mr. Chair. The commissioner said that it's quite a chore to implement a program of this size. You heard her mention all the agencies, Dolly, Deed, whatever, two or three others. What is the cost to implement this program to ensure that frontline workers get $1,500 each? What's the cost of this program? I mean, $667,000 workers and $1 billion. Surely, Representative Fraser, you must know the cost of this to implement because it's such a huge size program, according to Commissioner Roberts.
Representative Fraser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McDonald, I did put the appropriation amounts that will be going to the departments that will be running this within the bill. I don't have that right there in front of me, but it is in your packet. So the numbers are actually there of what the administrative cost will be to administer this program. Like, I would agree. You know, this bill was designed to be as inclusive as possible. You know, some of the things that you're saying about, you know, Main Street being closed, I think those things, I understand that. and I feel for those businesses. And I do believe we provided resources throughout the legislative session to try to take care of our small business because they're important to our communities. But at the time right now, we have not done the same to honor our workers and appreciate those that were there to help other businesses that were running to keep going. And I just want to make sure that we're not leaning into rhetoric or going into a place where we're trying to divide our workers against our businesses. I want to make sure that we're showing that we're uplifting our workers because that is important right now.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Lastly, Mr. Chair, Representative Fraser, I think you said that well, but I don't agree with you when you say that we are not appreciating our workers until we give them money. Okay, everybody got money. We all are in this together. Some got zero money. Some got unemployed. Some businesses closed. Some got PPP money. Some got hazard pay. We're all in this together, Representative Fraser. So I don't need to vote on a bill to give these workers $1,500 to tell them that I appreciate them. We all appreciate those who worked hard in the last 15, 16 months, 2 years rather. And everybody at one point was given some extra bonuses from our federal government and state. And we have done that, 2 years ago. We did pay some, I forget the amount, but we did give some good pay to those who are our front and line workers. So we appreciate the work that they've done. We don't need to give them an extra $1,500 so they think that we really appreciated them. They know we appreciated them. I guess that's my commentary and soapbox for the day. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair. Representative Fraser, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McDonald, I just have to point out that your statement was a little bit inaccurate. Not every worker received any type of hazard pay or bonus pay during this during the time that they work during the pandemic, particularly during the time that they worked for when the stay-at-home orders were in place, where they had to be in person, where they had to take the risk of being exposed to COVID-19. We've heard, in fact, we just heard literally minutes ago, we've heard workers testify to the fact that they lost money. They had to take days off of work because they had to quarantine because they were sick. They lost their sick time. And when they didn't have sick time or paid time off, they didn't get any payments. They still have bills from that. So I think it's very inaccurate to state that we paid workers already. This is a small token of appreciation. And for some, it's long overdue because they're still coming. They're still digging themselves out of a debt because they put themselves in a position to do the right thing and work hard for all Minnesotans to make us and keep us moving forward as a state. So we have to honor that and we have to appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald.
Representative Fraser, I didn't say all got hazard pay. Those who are on the front lines, the real frontline workers, the police, the nurses, those in the medical field, those frontline workers, I didn't say all of them. So I just wanted to correct your language on that. I didn't say everyone. The true frontline.
Representative Poston.
Thank you, Chair.
I'll say it in my closing. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Eklund. I've got a quick question for Representative Fraser. Mr. Bowman, during his testimony, said he did not get hazard pay. When I look at these categories of frontline workers, did some of these categories get hazard pay and did some of them not? I just don't know that much about hazard pay. Can you educate us on that a little bit?
Representative Fraser.
Mr. Chair, I do believe we have someone in the room that can speak specifically to the specifics of that question. I'd like to give them a moment to talk.
I'm not sure who we have here to speak on that, Representative Fraser.
I thought I saw a hand up, but I can't see whose hand that was. Hold on a second. Wait. Okay. Try Mr. Elliott.
Mr. Elliott, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Brian Elliott, the SEIU Minnesota State Council, and thank you, Representative Poston. The short answer is that hazard pay depended entirely upon the employer and their decision as to whether or not to grant that pay. There was a federal program for emergency leave, but it only affected a small segment of the workforce at employers between 50 and 500 workers. And it ended in 2020 that particular program. And so any worker who worked for an employer over 500 or under 50, or who worked as an emergency responder, a healthcare worker, those were also excluded as well. And so beyond that, it was entirely up to the employer.
Representative Polston.
Thank you, Mr. Elliott. Thank you, Representative Frazier and Chair Eklund.
Next up is Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Frazier, and especially thank you to the workers that we heard from. And I just want you to know, and I know my colleague, Representative McDonald, shares this, you are real frontline workers. You are the folks who fed us, put your lives on the line to feed us, to educate our kids, to take care of us in the hospitals, to drive buses so that folks could get where they needed to go. And we know that many in our community put their lives on the line, and thank you for representing them. My question to you, Representative Frazier, is based on what Troy Broman said, which I think he said is, why is it that working people are always told to wait? I'm wondering how long, I know we're now 3 years into this pandemic, and the question of finding workers from 2 years ago came up. I think Representative McDonald raised it. But I'm wondering how long that this policy has been in process.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Greenman. And thank you for sharing those comments about the fact that, you know, when we talk about our essential workers, they're all real frontline workers. They all put their lives on the line. They all put themselves in harm's way and being exposed to to COVID-19. And they're all essential workers to me, and they're all real frontline workers. We've got to get away from any rhetoric that's going to divide our workers. That's just not where we should be having these conversations right now. It's been almost 2 years since we've been having this conversation about taking care and recognizing these workers. When Mr. Bowman talked about the resources that he lost because he worked during that time and he contracted COVID, he had to quarantine, then he contracted COVID, and he lost his paid and sick time during that time. We've had several nurses that lost, that expended all of their PTO or all of their sick time and all their vacation time because they have to quarantine. These are workers that are waiting. They've been waiting for a long time, and they've been asking for help for us to give them resources to appreciate and acknowledge the work that they did during that time. And I just think it's well past the time that we do that.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Frazier. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for holding this hearing so we can get this done the second week of session. I know that we heard a bill last year and heard from many of these workers. I think we have heard from them over and over again. And it occurs to me that some of the logistical challenges that Representative McDonald and others raised about finding folks from 2 years ago actually could have been solved if we had passed this last year and actually responded to both the needs of workers, and it would have been easier. But we are going to do this, and I think that it's really important that we prioritize those folks who kept us safe and moving during the pandemic. And so thank you again, and I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to voting for this bill for the second time this week.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Frazier, for writing this bill. You know, it's not lost on me that throughout this pandemic that we that are sitting on this call, legislators, have been safely tucked behind our computers and not had to put ourselves at risk. And I think that's very humbling, because I remember at the very height of the pandemic going to the grocery store. I'm so glad you had somebody that works at the grocery store here today, because truly they were heroes. My husband and I remember trying to bring things to them, trying to figure out ways to thank them, because $1,500, quite frankly, to my colleague, is not enough to thank them for their being, you know, heroes and making our state run. I shopped for seniors during the pandemic, seniors that needed food, and the grocery store workers that were there helping to pack those groceries, to deliver those groceries to those families. They are true heroes, and I you know, appreciate the emphasis on who a real frontline worker is, because I don't think that we're really the ones to be judges of that. I'm sure that was just maybe a misuse of words. But I want to just also point out that the thoughtfulness on this bill is really good. When you look at subdivision 3, the eligibility of the frontline workers, you have income thresholds. I think that's really smart, and I thank you for being savvy and who would actually qualify for this, because there are certain people that have done well throughout the pandemic, and maybe this wouldn't be beneficial for them. So thank you for your thoughtfulness, Representative Frazier, and all the testifiers that came here today. I'm very supportive and look forward to voting yes.
Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to actually build upon what my colleague, Representative Edelson, said. I actually am a frontline worker. As a flight attendant, we were actually classified as frontline workers. And at the very beginning, we were working in conditions we didn't understand. We were not allowed to wear masks or gloves. It escalated to being able to do that in a fairly short amount of time once we realized that. I'm sorry. Was somebody else talking that I wasn't supposed to be?
No, Representative Berg, I think somebody was not muted. Please mute yourselves if you're not talking, and Representative Berg, proceed.
Oh, thank you. So I just want to point out that, yeah, not all of us did work safely behind a desk, and I appreciate the recognition from my colleague for that. I also want to say I really appreciate that my other colleague, Representative McDonald, has actually verbalized the seriousness of COVID and the fact that he is doing so much in his community to reach out to those workers in appreciation. That's all very heartening. And I want to, as always, thank the workers that came forward to share their stories today. And I just want to say that just because something isn't our lived experience doesn't mean that we don't then recognize the humanity of the folks whose lived experience it is. I would hope that we all dig deep and recognize what the right thing to do is in supporting this bill. $1,500 is not a prize. It's not a reward. It's not enough, but is one step that people in this body and in the other chamber have worked really hard on to literally recognize the humanity in the workers that kept us all going, whether that was gas in your car, toilet paper in your bathroom, or food in your fridge. I urge all of us to do the right thing, support these workers, and thank you, Representative Frazier, and all of your working group members to bring this before us. Thank you.
Any other member questions? I don't see any hands up. So I think, members, if you haven't noticed the direction that this committee is going to take under my chairmanship, we are always going to focus on the workers, and we are always going to focus on the vets. Those are the two groups that are prerogative under this committee, and we're going to make absolutely certain that we do. Representative McDonald, I will let you go, and then I will finish.
Well, Mr. Chair, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just raised my hand, but please don't indicate that I intended to interrupt you. And
I was finishing before I went to Representative Frazier, so I'll let you make your comment.
I appreciate it. And one of the reasons some of us got on the committee is to definitely defend the worker, but also the employer. If our group doesn't do anything to protect the employers, then the employees will have nowhere to work. So, Mr. Chair, I caution you to at least be fair enough for the employers who employ the employees. If we concentrate only on the employees, there'll be no employers. So, and I think you're a smart man. I think you notified that, you noticed that and recognize that. That's all I have.
Representative McDonald, if you ever talk to any of the union members that I represented for 20 some odd years in the mill, I always said that a contract is a two-way street. So you both have to abide by it. But this is a labor and industry committee. There are other committees that are going to deal with the employer aspect of things. And we will certainly, and have, if you know by my record, have supported the employers as well. But this focus is on the frontline workers. Representative Frazier, thank you for bringing this bill. I want to thank all of the members, all the testifiers, because we don't always live these experiences they have for the last 2 years. With that, any closing comments, Representative Frazier?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members, for your questions and your comments. As I do with all my bills, they will be taken under consideration, and we will be making tweaks as needed based on the feedback that we've gotten. The most important thing is to focus on the urgency of this, recognizing and honoring our frontline workers, all of our frontline workers and essential workers, and making sure that we get these resources out as quickly as possible. It has been a long wait. They do need the resources. It is not enough, but it is merely what we should be doing to honor the work that they have done for all Minnesotans. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. I will renew my motion that House File 2900 be referred to the State Government Finance Committee. Mr. Petrie, please take the roll.
Chair Eklund.
Yes.
Chair Eklund, yes. Representative Zhang.
Yes.
Representative Zhang, yes. Detmer is excused. Representative McDonald.
Donald, no.
Representative McDonald, no. Representative Berg.
Yes.
Representative Berg, yes. Representative Bliss is excused. Representative Edelson.
Yes.
Representative Edelson, yes. Representative Frederick.
Yes.
Representative Frederick, yes. Representative Greenman.
Yes.
Representative Greenman, yes. Representative Nelson.
Yes.
Representative Nelson, yes. Representative Poston.
Poston, no.
Representative Poston, no. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, no.
Representative Raleigh, no. Representative Sundin.
Yes.
Representative Sundin, yes. And Mr. Chair, we have 8 ayes and 3 nays.
8 ayes and 3 nays. House File 2900. The motion is adopted, and the House File 2900 is referred to State Government Finance. Any further questions or comments from the members? Seeing none, our next meeting will be Tuesday, February 15th at 3 p.m. We have two bills on that for, on agenda for that meeting. We are adjourned. Have a great weekend.